Agile in the last decade of ALM has taken us from thinking about backlog to working software. Justin's talk with continuous feedback is going to help us think about the next part of it, of getting from that working software to close the loop and go back to the backlog. So I think that's enough of an introduction, and we'll hand it over to you, Justin.
Thanks, Sam. Well, good morning, everybody. As Sam said, I definitely want to keep this interactive, so if you have questions, feel free to signal one of them, shout it out. I might have to repeat it since we are putting this on video, but that's pretty much it. So let's just get started. So as Sam said, pretty much everyone here is familiar with the Agile methodology, so I don't want to start with talking about basic Agile. Instead, I want to talk about how we can move beyond Agile and take what we've learned there, and really every step of the way through the product lifecycle, talking about ways of removing inefficiencies and getting rid of waste and putting the right feedback in the right people's hands so they can really make a difference every step of the way, as opposed to waiting for the very end of the product cycle where you're shipping out a piece of software and it's way too late to really make any changes to the application. This is going to be a key theme you're going to see throughout many talks in the conference, so I'll definitely try to reference those and point you in the direction of some other speakers that could give you a little more in-depth information in some other areas, because we do only have an hour, so I can't really show as much as I'd initially like to. So to get this started, I'm going to bring up this picture. You might have seen this picture in Jason Zander's talk, or Cameron Skinner's talk at the Build conference or at TechEd. But this is really a picture describing how development and operations works together as a part of the complete end-to-end continuous life cycle. It's not just about taking things from your stakeholders, developing your requirements, and shipping the software. There's a lot of steps along the way that are really important to take a step back, thinking about where can we make those steps better? How can we give developers the tools they need so as they're doing their job, they can make sure they're always working on the right priority and that they're always doing the right work without having a lot of distractions. When it comes to your product owners, it's really important to make sure they have their backlog, as we've learned from Agile, and it's prioritized. But what about the inputs that go into that backlog? How do we develop requirements or take requirements that come from our stakeholders or our business users and translate those in a way that the developers actually will understand? So we'll take a bit of time today to talk about that. And then, of course, at the end of the day, you're going to get these shippable increments of software, but what do we do with those? Generally, it's just throw it over the wall and give it out to our users. Maybe we're going to do some beta program. Maybe we'll have some usability studies. But how do we really get that feedback and own the feedback, take advantage of the feedback to try to improve our product? Very often we hear feedback or suggestions from users saying, you've built what I asked you for, but not really what I needed. And that's never our intention as we're building software. But it's way too often the case that that feedback describing what they really meant, what they really were looking for, comes in way too late to make a difference. And by then, you've got to ship what you've got, and you've got to start all over. We want to interrupt that entire flow and, again, every step of the way, get that feedback that you need. So I want to just highlight, and then, of course, once we do ship it, whether it's an online service or even if you're talking about a client-side application you deploy to customers, it's also very important to get the information from the field, from your users, as a monitoring solution if you're in a web space, to understand what's going on and what those customers are experiencing in the real world as opposed to in your lab. In Dev 10, we spent a lot of time talking about this no repro scenario, and that was great, but it didn't take into effect how we deal with web services, how we deal with client-side applications outside of your control. It would be much better to be seeing that information, putting that in your business analyst's hands, putting that in your developer's hands, so they can actually take action on it when they really can make a difference. So looking at this, we're going to start a little bit talking about misunderstood requirements and talking about how product owners can really develop their own image and how they can build a storyboard to truly depict what their stakeholders are asking for. So let me start with a little aside from the way I used to develop software before this last release. So in Visual Studio 2010, as part of that product cycle, I was the program manager for IntelliTrace. This was a pretty big feature. There was a lot of technical information we had to solve and technical problems for collecting the data, as well as a lot of UI-based features that we had to build to expose that data to customers. And it was a pretty in-depth feature, and I wanted to spend a lot of time trying to get as much as I could in front of customers and getting their feedback. I wanted to take all of my thoughts and document them. So I thought I was doing a great service to my team by writing a 45-page document with lots and lots of little screenshots and little pixel images showing exactly where everything would go, and huge bullet lists describing step by step what things should operate in what way and what happens if a button is clicked versus a hover effect. Does this sound familiar? Is this the way a lot of people are writing their documents today? So what's the problem with that scenario? Well, as the problem I found out is, I put a ton of blood, sweat, and tears into this huge document, and I think it's fantastic. I even can get everybody into a room, perhaps, and have them review the document. And then I kind of hand it off to the dev team and say, okay, here's my baby. Go take it. Go execute on this thing. Make something real. And what happens? Well, devs get busy. They don't have the time. They definitely have the passion for the customer, but they think they understood what was in that document, and they basically put that document aside and say, you know what? I know what Justin is asking for. I'm just going to go forward, execute, and everything will be great. And then, of course, what comes out the other end is close. It might look like what I was talking about, but it misses a lot of the key points. A lot of the details are ignored. And it's not a fault of the developers. They're doing everything they can. But how in the world is that 45-page document I put together at all consumable? That's not at all being agile. It's not at all being helpful to the development team. So one of the things I'm going to show in a demo is how we can, instead of writing these really, really massive or formal documents, take a step back and use pictures to describe what we're trying to really build for our customers. And a picture is worth 1,000 words. So let's go over and see a little bit about how storyboarding in Dev 11 can actually help you build a better picture. So I'm going to switch over to my demo machine. So you'll hear more about the product backlog in Aaron Bjork's talk later today or later in the week. But here's the product backlog in Visual Studio. This is Maya's, the product owner's home base where all of my individual requirements and user stories are located. And the first story I want to work on is this first one here, this I can chat with my friends on a phone app. And for the demos here, I basically have a simple phone application and a website and a WPF application for chatting back and forth, and there's a back end. The product's not that important, but just wanted to give you some context. We're going to try to keep things consistent throughout the demo. So that's the application we're talking about. And in this case, I'm working on, I've got basically a blank user story. I haven't put any description or acceptance criteria in yet. And what I need to do is, I've got some ideas in my head of what this phone application should look like. I think that there's probably going to want to be a way to log into the application, and I'm probably going to want to have some UI. And in the past, what I do is I jump into Word, I jump into Photoshop, and I just right away get into the pictures. Maybe I'd have a meeting and we'd whiteboard a bunch of stuff and then I'd translate those to the documents. That's great. That's really a helpful way of getting feedback from your team, keeping everybody in the loop and having the discussion. But the problem is taking that little phone picture, I mean, we all got the phones with the cameras in them now, taking the picture and shoving that into a document and putting a whole bunch of words behind it isn't really that useful. There's no way I'm going to go to Brian Harry, my boss, and show him a phone picture of a whiteboard drawing saying, oh, this is exactly what the UI that we need to go build for our customers. That's not going to fly. I need to definitely put more thought into it. But I don't want to go as far as going into Photoshop and making it pixel perfect and bringing Mickey and Tyler and some of the designers on my team trying to use all of their artistic abilities and make this thing ideal and perfect as if I was to develop it for my customers. So instead, what I'd like to do is be able to do something a little bit more achievable, something that I, as a product owner, am comfortable with. So what we've done in Dev 11 is we built a new extension for PowerPoint to allow you to storyboard in PowerPoint using a whole bunch of new add-ins for that purpose. So in the current builds, we don't have the launch point, but we are working right now to having the ability to write from a user story, start storyboarding from PowerPoint. So I'm just going to launch that right here from the start menu instead. Again, we're still in progress of working on this. There's more coming, so this will be integrated inside of the work item itself. So here we are inside of PowerPoint, and you'll notice that once I launch this, I have kind of like a getting started guide with some information telling me about PowerPoint storyboarding, but that's what I'm here for. So What we've done is we've built this brand new storyboard shapes library and a storyboards ribbon in PowerPoint. And this allows product owners to just from the beginning use the tools they already know and love, namely the Microsoft Office suite, and be able to use that to build those pictures that they're talking about. So we're talking for the user story, for our context, we're talking about building that phone application. So let's just jump in right away and start designing that phone application to see how the storyboarding tool works. So right from here, I want to make a new slide. And if I go to the new slide dropdown, I can see a whole bunch of templates have already been dropped in there, allowing me to just get started from the ground, from right now. So I'm going to click here for the home screen. And that's a pretty nice home screen. It looks a lot like my Windows phone. And I want to go add a new tile for my chatter application. So one option I can have, obviously, is just to scroll through here. But I know I want a tile, so I can just search for that. And then just drag this tile right onto the screen. Boom, I'm done. Pretty simple so far. I can go edit the text in this thing. And because I'm a pretty visual person and because the team really cares about it, I want to have a great logo on this. And I haven't spent the time to go trademark a logo or get some intellectual property around my brand. I really want to go get a quick logo from the web. So I'm just going to go to Bing and do an image search for chatter image. Let's see what we can find. And sure enough, there's some pretty nice looking stuff here. This one looks pretty cool. So what I'd like to do is import that into PowerPoint. One of the nice things about the storyboard application being built into PowerPoint is we can leverage all the functionality that's already in PowerPoint, namely the ability to take screenshots from any application that's on the screen. So right from here, I can do a screen clipping, draw a box around what I want, and boom, it's inside of my application. I'm ready to go. I can put this where I want. Now I notice, you know what, there's this white box around it, and if I wanted to follow the phone guidelines, I kind of want it transparent. Again, let's leverage the abilities of PowerPoint, and I can just go to color, remove the transparency, and boom, my image is in much better shape. I can scale that down a little bit. In just a couple clicks, I've already got the home screen of my phone application working. Now, one of the other nice things about being built into PowerPoint is we have the ability to have multiple slides. So we're not talking about static individual images. We can have flows to our application. So I can build a second slide right now to show what the phone application itself would look like. I can give it my title. So here's my chatter application. I can go give it a comment. Let's say we've already done our login screen. I want to describe what it would look like for me interacting with another person. So I'll put their name at the top of the screen. And now I'd like to kind of have a text box so I can search for that. Again, it's just as easy as drag and drop. There's a huge number of shapes in our shape library. And I can just easily add that information to my screen. In addition, I might want to have a little box at the bottom, a text input button box for where my text would be for my chat application. I could put a button on the screen. And you'll start to see as you do more and more searches, we've actually pretty exhaustively looked at across the different platforms of building Microsoft software and brought the shapes that you'd actually expect to see. So for Windows Phone, we have the tile shapes, keyboards, the Windows Phone style buttons. For Windows applications, we've got Windows dialogues, SharePoint images, Office images, so no matter what kind of software you're building, and of course web images as well, so all the different shapes you need will be found inside the tool. So I could put that together and that's all great, but one of the other cool things of PowerPoint is you have all these animations you can leverage. So as I'm starting to build this, it's not just an image that I'm putting together, I can actually start giving my stakeholders and my team a sense of how this application is going to work. So I'm just going to quickly put in some text here. So first I'm going to say something saying hi. And then Ravi would respond to me with, how's the ALM summit going? And I'll respond, things like that. But at this point, it's just static text. But again, because I've got PowerPoint in here, I can just go through the animation tab and start showing the wiping functionality to show from the top. And all these things can start to wipe in. And I can add additional animations to this. And not only that, we're in PowerPoint. So at the end of the day, all I have to do is press F5. And I can go into a room with my stakeholders, or Brian, Harry, or Sam, who are going to go approve this to be developed by the development team, and they can see exactly what it is that I built in real time just by using PowerPoint. And of course, PowerPoint allows you to have the ability to click through, so I can click on the button, and that would bring up to the right screen. I can show animations, things coming into the screen, etc. So there's a lot of things that we get by having this inside of PowerPoint. In addition, there might be things that I want to share with other team members. I'm not just the only person working on the team. Maybe Nilo's one of the other product owners, and he needs to work with the same set of shapes. A common scenario for this is we were working with T-Mobile recently, and they have their own style. All of their buttons are pink, and all of their text fields are gray, because they have their own themes to this. And they asked, can we build our own shapes? Absolutely. All you have to do is take your shape here. Let's say I wanted to make this chatter tile something common that I would use over and over again. And from the storyboard shapes library, I can add that to my shapes, and that'll appear in my library here. So I can call this my tile. And then, of course, I can also export that to a file and share that with my team. I can check it into TFS, put it on a SharePoint site, whatever I want to do to share that and make it a community property is fully available to me. In addition, we're looking at ways of exposing this on the web and having a web presence where you can go directly from PowerPoint to the web, like you can for a clip art, let's say, and find more shapes that are developed by the community. So we're working a lot, we're thinking through a lot of these scenarios to see how can people collaborate using storyboarding as a mechanism to describe what it is they want to develop and get early feedback on that design from stakeholders, from the team, and even for customers. One of the talks that you'll see following this one is with Mickey, and she's going to talk a bit about how we do usability testing inside of Microsoft. And for me, being her client or her customer, I'll take the storyboard early on, and she'll bring in a bunch of people, and I'll be able to show them the storyboard, walk them through this, let them interact with the storyboard by putting different click paths using PowerPoint's linking, and get their early feedback before a single line of code is written, before I write any documentation. The PowerPoint is the spec at that point. So any questions about storyboarding? Cool. So let's keep on going. So storyboarding is great, but we don't want it to be in isolation. We want to bring this back to the developers, because at the end of the day, the developers are going to be executing on the tasks inside of TFS. They're not going to be wanting to find these files on random SharePoint sites where the product owners have put them. So we also have the ability to, once you've saved this file, link this directly to your work item. So if I save this to a file share here, I'll just call this my chatter, phone chatter app screen. And then from here, I can go bring up my links control, connect to my TFS server, and then find the right work items that this exhibits. If you were to do this in the reverse direction by clicking start storyboarding from the work item itself, that link would automatically be created. And that's something that we're working on right now. So with very, very little effort, you're able to quickly go in, find the work item that you wanted it to be on. So let's say we can do this one. Click OK, and the link is made. And now if I go back to that work item, we'll close down PowerPoint. If I go back to the work item and refresh it, you'll see that that link is right there. And all my developer has to do is double-click this, so as they're going into their capacity planning and task breakdown meetings, all that information is right here. There's only one true spec. Everything goes back to that work item. So that's one of the key ways we're trying to get feedback early on design, in a way that's about the picture, is not about the words. So bring back to the slides. So that's the first area, is about making sure you understand those requirements and be able to put them into a backlog in a way that people can actually understand and have a discussion around them. The next area is around the backlog itself, and I'm not going to spend too much time around this, but it's very important, as we've learned from Agile, to have that backlog and have true discussions and feedback on the priorities of the items on there. What you don't want to see happening is a developer working on the story he wants to work on as opposed to the one that's really going to provide the business value our customers are going to expect, that our stakeholders want. And a backlog is a great tool to help you with that. In Aaron Bjork's talk later this week, you'll hear a lot more about how Agile principles are used inside of Microsoft to help us align our own priorities as well. Then, of course, we get into the whole sprint itself, and this is really the developer-tester-centric area of the team. At this point, I, the product owner, have already handed off my design. The developers know what it is they need to go build, and they actually have a great idea. I mean, Visual Studio is a fantastic place to write the software, but there's a lot of problems that they experience as part of their day-to-day that's really a distraction, and there's a lot of waste in what they do. One of the key areas is code reuse. There haven't been really great tools to do that, and being able to find clones of your code throughout your application. Code clone's a new feature that we're working on that you'll hear about later this week that does that. Other areas are around feedback from the developers themselves. None of us are perfect. We all make mistakes as we're developing software. And one of the things we inside of Microsoft have done is implemented not harsh but strict code review policies that require developers to work with other developers on their team and possibly cross-team to have the code reviewed before and potentially after check-in if there's a rush to get that in. And there haven't been really good tools to help facilitate that discussion. A lot of times what we've seen is developers getting in the same room together and they talk through the code and one person walks the other person through it and somebody takes notes. That's good. It's really important to have that feedback mechanism. But wouldn't it be great if that was a much easier experience? Wouldn't it be nice if a developer could, in their own time, be notified that, hey, Justin just sent a code review, be able to open up that code review on their own box, switch context away from what they're currently working on, and be able to, at their own leisure, at their own pace, read through the code, write inline comments about that, and have a conversation back with the initial developer about what they think about the code. That's something that Peter Provost is going to talk about a little bit later with the new code review feature, but that's another key area where you have your developers working together and giving each other feedback. Similarly, unit testing is a very important skill set and very important tool you can leverage in your developer side to make sure you're getting the right information early and finding out about failures and possible regressions. And we've also spent a lot of time improving that, and Peter will talk about that. I don't want to spend too much on the developer time. And lastly, there's a lot of waste in losing focus. I mean, how often have you as a developer been sitting around and you're working on your project, you've got the task that you've got currently side, and a P0 bug comes out of nowhere and suddenly you have to completely stop what you're doing and everything has to be focused on that P0 bug? That's something that happens to my developers all the time on our team. The problem was in the past, we never had a clean workspace. We had to go figure out what were all the files we have checked out, shut them all down, shelve them off into TFS somewhere, close out all the breakpoints that we had set, close out all of our extra windows for debugging crashes and traces and IntelliTrace files and architecture diagrams. And we put a lot of information in front of us as we start to do development. But the problem is once I switch context, it's a very expensive operation for me to switch context to work on that P0 bug, let alone getting my environment in a place where I can actually take action on that bug. And then, if I do get the fix done in a reasonable amount of time, I spend just as much effort to go back to where I was, resetting up my environment, resetting up all those breakpoints, et cetera. So one of the new things that we're doing inside of Visual Studio is giving developers tools to help be very helpful to them in easily switching contexts during their individual workday. So we'll make a quick demo of this. Here I am inside of Visual Studio. And I'm a developer. Again, I'm working on my chat application. And if I look at my work window, which is a new window inside of Team Explorer, I can see that I'm working on this bug that there's no browser to choose a picture for my chat avatar, so to speak. And I've got a whole bunch of stuff already opened. I've got a bunch of files opened. I've got breakpoints set, etc. And out of nowhere, the triage team just did their daily triage, and this P0 bug right here saying something about the website's not rendering correctly, that some text is backwards, comes in. In the past, again, as I said, it takes a lot of effort to switch context. But with my work and with the new task switching functionality, this is really seamless. All I have to do is click suspend. And at that point, my entire IDE gets cleaned. All of my breakpoints go away. All of the windows that weren't relevant are now closed or are hidden away. So all of my trace files and things like that are just taken out of my face, so I don't have to look at it. And now I can just easily switch to this new item right here and start working on this with a clean IDE with zero switching cost. And then, of course, when I finish this, I can go back to this one right here, and all I have to do is click resume, and my entire IDE will be brought right back to where I was at the time that I suspended it. So if we give that a second here, it'll pop it right back up. And my breakpoints are now set again. All of my code has been brought back. And we're using the shelf sets, but it's now just an individual one-step task. And this might seem small, but when you're talking about how many times a developer gets interrupted throughout the day, this is a huge amount of time that you can save on the developer front. So any questions about that? Sure. So the question is, are you able to kind of virtualize that context and give it to another person? At the end of the day, it's just a shelf set under the hood. So if you wanted to look at that code, absolutely. You can have another person do a query for all of your shelf sets and bring that up on their ID as well. other questions about my work and task switching? Yes. Okay, so the question is like basically what are the boundaries of that context? So let's say that I've gotten a bug that comes in saying the release from a month ago has actually been, there's been a regression there and we need to go back to that month ago's code and fix it. But the problem is my current source code is today. It's been a month worth of check-ins from me and every other developer on my team, so definitely the code I need isn't right there. You definitely are able to sync, but because you're using TFS source control, once you've suspended and shelved that current work, you can bring in and do a get to the previous point, have your code be updated to that old 1 month ago cold code, make the fix that you need, check that in, and then when you resume, it will be brought back to the current context. So you won't have to worry about doing all those gets. It's done automatically.
Does it allow changing a branch?
I'm actually not sure. I think you can change branches, but I'm not confident in that. I can follow up, but we can have a discussion afterwards, and I can definitely get you the right answer on that.
So can multiple developers be working on one task, and then I can see that you're working on it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Absolutely. So one of the things I haven't shown, and Aaron will talk a little bit about this in his talk, is not only do we have a backlog, but we also have a task board that the team's able to leverage, see whether they want to open it on their own box or they want to show it in stand-up. That's something that they can do every day. And actually, that's what we as a team do. Every morning at 10:45, we meet in the hallway. We have a projector. We've got our task board there. We can see everything everybody's working on, update tasks in real time, burn down tasks, and give each other that information and have it as a communication mechanism. Absolutely. Okay. That's fair. The question is about, is this really bad behavior in making it such a low cost of switching tasks? It's a yes and no. I mean, we are not trying to say you should be task switching daily, hourly, for all the things that come in. It's definitely a management issue trying to make sure that you don't let all that stuff come downhill. But having said that, we all know they're going to be P0s. There's going to be high priority work that absolutely is critical and must be helped now. We want to help enable that scenario. We're not encouraging in any way, shape, or form managers going away and saying, hey, developers, do whatever you want. Whoever pings you last is the one that gets the ball, so to speak. So, absolutely. Any more questions? Cool. So, let's talk. We've gone a little bit around this cycle so far. We've talked about the development process. And then, of course, once you've gotten all of this work, that's where continuous integration comes in. One of the key principles of Agile is continuous integration. We definitely at Microsoft adhere to that and care a lot about that, and the TFS products with Visual Studio are definitely there to foster that and to embrace that. So we definitely suggest using continuous integration as part of your build process, again with your unit tests, bringing those in to give you that continuous feedback every day about what's happening and get the current check-in to be the one that sets off the flag, not something the next day or that night that's there's been a huge slew of check-ins and you were never able to pinpoint exactly what it is that caused the failure. So that's a key point. It's a minor point in feedback, but definitely we want to embrace that as part of this whole virtuous cycle. So then we get into the whole operation space. So we've shipped some software, and now it's being deployed to our servers. And then what happens? Well, our customers start to experience this. They start to try to use it, and suddenly they start seeing problems. And as developers, we have no idea about it because it's out of our control. Maybe the operations team has an ability to see this because they've got monitoring tools and other processes in place to monitor those servers, and that's great for web servers. But what about phone applications? What happens when I have my Windows phone application and I'm using the latest version of the Amazon store on that, and that crashes? Does Amazon know about that? That's where analytics and telemetry can really help give you, the developer, or you, the product owner, feedback of what your customers are experiencing. And that goes well beyond anything you're going to find inside of a monitoring solution because it's out of your control. So we've been working with one of our partners who is here today, Preemptive, and we had a bunch of guys in the back there from the Preemptive team, and we're partnering with them to enable an analytics solution inside of Visual Studio where all of those crashes come right to the developer's desktop at the time they occur, so within a delta, of course, of the processing, but it gets in their hands so they can see exactly what their customers are experiencing. So I'm going to switch over to a different server here. And what we're going to do is we're going to open up an application here, and I want to see how common this is. So I've got my nice little WPF chat application. Here's the WPF version like we were working on the phone. And I'm a new user. I've just downloaded this off the Chatter website, and I go in, type my name. Of course, it's the first thing I'm going to do. Try to log into my chat application, and it disappears. And I'm kind of naive. I think, hey, maybe I clicked the wrong button. Maybe I pushed escape or something like that. So let me go try that again. And we'll try it one more time. Huh. It's crashed again. So what's the first thing I go do? Probably is to go to Twitter and start cursing out whoever wrote this Chatter application and saying they don't know what they're doing. This is a terrible, terrible piece of software. Give it a low rating in the store, things along those lines. And I, the developer of that application, have no idea this is going on. Maybe a couple days later, I magically found 5 minutes of free time, went onto Twitter to go check out something for my friends, and happened to see out of the corner of my eye somebody making complaints about this application. And by then, it's way too late. The application, not only has it been deployed, but we've already lost that user. We've lost the ability to make a sale. We've lost the ability to make money. And the customer would have loved for me to know that. They would definitely, there's even a chance they would give me more information at the time, especially in internal applications. In your IT department, if you could figure out, hey, it was Joe's box that had this crash, for me to be able to contact Joe and get more information from him and delve deeper into the problem, we'd love to be able to do that. But the tools haven't been there today. Preemptive is helping provide that directly in the box. So in the past, they've worked on a product called Dotfuscator, and Dotfuscator has been a client-side tool that's shipped inside of Visual Studio to allow you to obfuscate your code. They're extending that functionality by allowing you to provide analytic software inside of your application at the time you're going to compile it and put in probes to say, anytime an exception occurs, I want you to send this information out to the cloud to some endpoint, and then I want that information to come inside of TFS as new work items. So I'm going to open up TFS here, and I'm just going to open up my, you can see there's this preemptive analytics hub here. I'm just going to go open up the query for that, and I can see all the incidents that have come in. And I can see there's a bunch of incidents that have already taken place. And if I look at this one right here, sorry, the newest one at the top, I can see that this is the exception that my WPF application just logged. You can see that there are two instances of this because I tried it twice. I get a complete stack trace of everything that happened in that application. I can also get information about the version of the application, et cetera. And I even can get some incident details to uniquely identify users. So if I opt into adding additional privacy concerns or privacy prompts to my application, the user can decide whether that application sends this data to me or not, as well as I have the ability as a developer to add additional functionality for having them put comments in, putting their email address, etc. And if I was doing an internal application, I could just hard code that if I wanted to. And all that information would be here right inside of the work item. So as a triage team, I can look at this information, get the feedback from the field right away, and I can make a decision of what to do about this. And looking at this problem, it's saying the file is not found error. Well, you know what? In my deployments, I probably missed a binary. I need to just go redeploy this to the website. This is an incredibly simple fix that can affect a lot of people very quickly, but otherwise I wouldn't have been able to figure this out unless I physically went to somebody's machine because I happened to know that they were running this or I saw it in my own box and tried the application. And Preemptive is helping us provide that. Now, they're going to be here this week. They're going to be holding office hours during the open hours, as well as tomorrow night in the forum discussion in the room across the hall. They'll have a booth set up, and you can go talk to them about a little more in-depth information about what they're trying to provide. And they can definitely give you demos and answer any of your questions. Now, what we're shipping inside the box for them is a lighter version. They also are going to have a more professional copy of this that you can then go and get more details, and you can pay them for that application as well. So there's a full spectrum of functionality there as well. Any questions about analytics? Yeah.
About web applications, either on the server or on the client.
Absolutely. So the question is, what about web applications? This will work for managed applications in general, and they also have a solution for JavaScript and native as well that they can talk to you more about. But I showed you here for the WPF application. If you look at this other one that happened right here, this is from a phone application that I had running. I could have instrumented my WCF service. It's up to me to decide what I want to instrument and where I want to get that data. Yes?
The version of DevStudio 11 will be
The question, so what SKU of Visual Studio will the preemptive solutions ship with? Visual Studio Pro and above will have this feature, and all versions of TFS will have this feature as well, because there's a client side as well as a server side component here. Other questions? Great.
So I'm guessing that's also going to integrate with TFS, just kind of like this.
Yep, that's a great segue exactly to what I was going to talk about next. So the question is about System Center. So this is a great solution from one aspect, which is I'm deploying my application out to my client-side application or my services, and I'm deploying that out, and I want to get information back. The other perspective of this is Microsoft Operations Manager is one of the leading monitoring tools for applications today. But the problem is there's that big bridge that you have, this big gap that you have to bridge between your operations team and your engineering team. The operations team is 100% focused on their alerting system from Operations Manager and is trying to make sure all of those alerts are handled in the appropriate manner. So when they get an alert that the network is down, they can go take action on that. Of course, based on their troubleshooting guides, there are cases where they aren't equipped to handle a problem, where you need to have source code access to fix the problem. And one of the things we're working with inside of Visual Studio with in conjunction with Operations Manager is building that bridge where your operations engineer from inside Ops Manager, which is their console, can right-click and say, I want to assign this to engineering and have that appear in TFS as a work item as well. So that's another place that we want to do it. We definitely think there's a very importance working with Preemptive as well as with the Operations Manager solutions to bridge, get that development team again, get that feedback every step of the way from as many sources as possible and put it into the hands of the right people. You don't want the operations team sitting on this and maybe an email thread to somebody that's on vacation for 2 weeks is the one that receives this and our customers are the ones that get hurt. We definitely want to alleviate that pain. Questions? Okay. So now we've deployed our software and we've gotten some feedback on it being used. But there's one last piece of really important feedback in this overall cycle, and that's your stakeholders. Sometimes you're not, for this deployment section, you're not deploying out externally. You've just completed a release or you've completed a sprint, and before it's ready to ship, you want to have your beta program, or even before your beta program, you want to have your internal stakeholders or subject matter experts try the software out and see, does it really meet the customer's needs? And in the past, we do that truly at betas. We spend 6 months working on the software, and then suddenly we're going to get some feedback. That just seems backwards. Why can't I, as a product owner, spend a single sprint working on 2 or 3 user stories and then have people give me the feedback right at the end of the sprint? The problem is, of course, stakeholders' time is valuable. That's a problem that can be solved. What hasn't been able to be solved right now is the cost of entry has been way too high. I have to go set up environments. I have to go schedule meetings. I have to go set up the demo box and then get everybody in the same room. And then I've got to sit there with notes in OneNote, taking notes of everything everybody says. And then I've got to send an email with a whole bunch of action items. And then I've got to respond when the dev team fixes them. And oh, by the way, none of this is traceable at all through TFS. It happens to all be in my email client where I can't even query to find out, did I actually fix the problem that Bob pointed out? So that's another area of feedback that we really think it's important, making sure that the stakeholder has their voice heard and that we ensure that their thoughts and their feedback is incorporated back into the product and then brought in once again as new requirements, reprioritized on the backlog, et cetera. So that's another key area we're trying to focus on is how do we make that easy for our customers. So I'm going to switch over to the web instance again. So here we are back in the sprint. You can see that I'm getting close to the end of the sprint here. I've got some software. I've done a couple of key user stories. Actually, I'm just going to switch to my previous sprint's set of user stories. So here's a list of all the user stories that I've completed. And what I really like to do is these three stories were something one of my teams worked on. They just finished the sprint. And I'd love to get feedback on these stories and give them to my stakeholder. But I don't want to have to do any of the manual process of doing all of these meetings. I really want to let the stakeholder on his own time be informed about this and be able to give the feedback on his box and have me, the product owner, be able to consume that and take action on that feedback. So one of the things we're building is a new end-to-end feedback scenario directly in the box. So right from here, I'm able to ask for feedback. And this will bring up a quick little dialogue. And from here, I can go put in my stakeholder's name. So I'm going to ask Robbie for some feedback here. And I can give a subject, because we're going to send an email here. So feedback on latest Amazon.com improvements. It's already linked to all of the user stories that I've done work on. So, and of course, if I click on the links here, or if my stakeholder clicks on the links, they'd be able to bring that up and see all the details, all the storyboards backing those user stories, so they can get a full picture of what the context is that I'm asking for feedback. But in addition, I can have additional context I want to provide. So I'm just going to copy of that here. Just to make it my life a little easier, I'm just going to copy and paste that additional context we've asked for, basically saying we've done a couple sprints of work. We'd love to get your feedback on here, that they should log in with their credentials, their typical Amazon credentials. If I had a specific remote desktop machine, I might mention that here. If I had a specific private domain name or credentials to log in, I can obviously add those in this location. And I can also specify a due date, so I want to get this feedback by Friday. And then I'm given the ability to preview this, and I can see the email, and I can take ownership of this email since it is coming from me. So I want to make sure I can personalize this, add additional information. Maybe I want to bold things, add images, etc. All that stuff is available to me. This is just like your email client. And you'll notice it's already got the ability to install a tool. It's got a launch point. Everything my stakeholder needs is put right into this email. So I don't have to do any additional work. All that's pre-filled out for me. And when I send this, this is going to be sent off to Ravi, and I'm also going to get a CC of this in my own Outlook box so I can track that in Outlook if I wanted to have a conversation saying, hey, that machine is down, give me 5 minutes while I fix it, etc. So that's an easy way of requesting the feedback, but what about providing that feedback? What does that look like from the stakeholder's perspective? So I'm going to go over, I'm not going to open Outlook right now because I don't want to show all of my mail, but I've got the same email already prepared right here. So this is the email that my stakeholder would have received. And they can, of course, read this email. They can click on the links and get more information like, hey, what's this user story? Okay, I can go read about this user story and how we've redesigned the website, etc. And then when they're ready to go give the feedback, all they have to do is they click start. That gives them a little security prompt. You click yep. And what that does is it launches the feedback client, which is a new client-side tool that can be run on-site on the box of your stakeholder. And then, of course, the email also had the ability to install that as well if it wasn't already installed, but you could pass that out through SMS, et cetera. So now what I do from once I start this, I'm able to start giving my feedback. I immediately notice that there is my user story context at the top of the screen, so I don't even have to open up that website with the context. I can just see it right here in line, so I don't have to do any context switching, which is important since I'm a pretty busy person. I only have 5 minutes to give this feedback. I'm able to give rich text feedback. Well, actually, let's open the application they've asked us to open to start actually giving feedback. So they wanted me to go to Amazon, so I'll go to Amazon. And I want to give feedback on this redesigned homepage layout. So first impressions are it looks good. I'm able to add additional rich information to this, so I can add a screenshot. Header seems like it hasn't changed in 5 years. Nice feedback there. We can give more screenshots. We can take the full screen if we wanted to. Maybe I want to give some feedback about this ad. And maybe I want to annotate that ad, so I can just double click this image here and I can add my notes onto it. So maybe I want to circle something here. Yeah, like that. We can save that off and that'll update itself automatically. In addition to text and screenshots, we're also able to add attached files. So if I had additional data I wanted to provide, or maybe I had some exported file I wanted to attach that, you can do that. You'll also notice at the bottom of the screen it says recording. What it's recording right now is not only the video of what's being done on the screen, but also all the audio that I'm saying right now. And that's all being stored inside of a video file. So my stakeholder, if I'm a lazy stakeholder and I don't have time to write notes and I just want to iterate exactly what I'm seeing, I can definitely do that. My microphone will pick it up. It'll get stored inside that file. And my stakeholder will be or my product owner will be responsible for parsing that information. And when I'm done with all my feedback, I just click submit. I can give it a rating, so pretty good shape. Looking good. If I could type today. And submit that. And off it goes to my product owner. And then I can go give the next piece of feedback that he's asked for. And in this case, I've already given feedback. So when I click start here, you'll see all the feedback I had provided earlier in the space. So I can, of course, edit that feedback. Again, because it's an email, I can forward that initial email to anybody I want. So let's say I was the one that got this email, but you know what? I'm busy. I really want Sam to provide feedback because I don't have time to do it. Or I think that Nilo's got some really good insights in this area. I could just forward that email. They can click start launching, and their feedback would be provided and put into TFS as well. And all that feedback, again, is being put into TFS. It's not an email thread. It's in something that I, as a product owner, am used to seeing. It's in the same console as all my bugs, my user stories, everything. So I'm able to really easily switch between these pieces of information, get one overview of the application from my external customer feedback, my stakeholder feedback, my team's feedback, and then take action on that. So let's close this down, and we can open up the web access and see what that looks like. So if I pull up my list of work items, I can pull up my query here of all my feedback requests, and I can see that there have been 6 pieces of feedback, 3 of which are pending. I'm still waiting for Ravi to give me feedback on this so I can have some sort of tracking of who has done what. I also can see all of the feedback that Justin provided. So here's the first one that we just did here. I see all of the images, all of the text. I can play that recording file. So once I open this thing up, that'll open up Windows Media Player and start playing the video. And you'll hear all of the audio of me trying to describe all of this. And then on top of that, now I want to actually take action on this. It's great that it's in a work item, but my team isn't going to go, my developers aren't going to go parse this feedback file and say, okay, which of the pieces of feedback are important. I, as the product owner, want to break this down into bugs and user stories for the team to then go execute and put in priority order back on the backlog. Again, having one continuous flow of information as we were discussing in that previous slide. So maybe this piece of information right here looks like a new bug to me. I can just go here, make a new story or a new bug. In this case, I'm going to make a new user story, put that in there, and now that's now on my backlog as soon as I save this, and I can then prioritize it as appropriate. And, of course, there are links back and forth, so I can see what user story did we ask for feedback and which new user stories and bugs were created from that feedback. So I, as a stakeholder, can go in, run the same query, and see what action did people have, or did they take on my feedback? Did they really listen to me? Did they complete this? What latest builds do I need to get to see where those things have been resolved, et cetera? So there's a nice flow for the stakeholders and the product owners to interact with each other and truly have a conversation about that feedback. Questions on the feedback scenario? Yes? So the question is, can you broadcast the request to more than one person? Absolutely. Today, the way we have it limited is they have to be a user inside of TFS. We've definitely gotten feedback that we want to make that broader, where you just provide email addresses, and we're looking at ways of enabling that. But absolutely, you can provide as many users as you want. If you, in theory, you would be able to provide team aliases, et cetera. We're working through some of those scenarios, but our intent right now, the intention is to be able to let you send it to as many people as you want. So the question is around licensing. I don't want to be the one discussing licensing. It'll definitely be as a part of the SKU model. There'll be a lot of other people that are in the marketing realm. They can talk about that. I'm going to stay away from the licensing questions. It'll be appropriately licensed. How's that? Yeah.
So I have a question about getting feedback from a release. So for example, I give the small user base a release, a beta version, and I want to get feedback from that release. So instead of attaching the feedback to backlog items,
so the question is, can you attach the feedback to release? Absolutely. It depends on how you architect your iterations and your areas. Aaron will talk a little bit more about the concept of team and iteration schedule, but absolutely, you can make a hierarchy where you can say sprint 3 is a part of release 1, and you can do a query of everything in release 1. It's just work items. If the information is there in the work items, you can query for it. You can make customized queries to give you anything you want. Yes? So the question is, how would this work for mobile development scenarios? So today, the feedback client itself doesn't work on the mobile devices, but the way we definitely want to get it to be able to work on those scenarios, be able to bring the screenshots back from your Slate devices for Win8 as well as your phone devices. But for today, you would run the feedback client on your box and put the feedback in there manual on your rich client on your Windows machine or your laptop, and with the phone side by side. Long term, we definitely want to improve that scenario to be able to make it a little more seamless. We know there's room for improvement there.
Are you planning also to extend that out to other vendor mobile devices as well, or open that up?
So the question is, how far are we going to extend it? We don't really have plans right now of how far we're going to extend it. We're at the stage right now where we're able to get the feedback scenario. We're looking for feedback on what we've done already. And then based on that feedback, we may decide to go further into the Windows Phone or Windows 8 space. Maybe we need to go further to other platforms. We're really not sure yet. That's a great question. So the question's about how we looked at how we can, I mean, when it comes to stakeholders, you want to make the ease of entry as low as possible. Have we looked at better ways of deployments, easier end-to-end scenarios? Absolutely. What I'm showing now is what we're showing at the developer preview, which we released at the Build conference. We've definitely come a long way since then. As we get closer and closer to our next release, you'll see more information in upcoming months. But we definitely think it's important. We definitely have heard both ends of the story. We've heard customers say, you know what, I can't deploy anything in my organization. It must be pushed out through an IT department. And we've heard, I have complete control. I want to be able to just click it and have it install it. We're working through those issues. It's definitely some feedback that we care a lot about. Other questions about the end-to-end feedback scenario? Yes. Sorry, Sam, could you bring the microphone? It's just hard for me to hear. Okay, so the question is, so all these recordings take up a lot of space. How do you manage that on your TFS server? Because you don't want it just to be bloated. Just like with the Test Manager product, we have the ability where rich attachments, which tend to be larger, will be on the server and you want to clean them up over time. We have built some power tools to help enable that scenario where you can clean the server out. But we definitely want to leave that in the control of the administrators. We don't want to start saying any attachment that's older than 6 months is automatically deleted because that gets really scary. But it's something we definitely care about. We want to make sure that the team and the administrators have the ability to clean that up and manage that from their own perspective. One of the changes to that end that we're making somewhat parallel to the feedback tool is we're, instead of automatically having the recording, have it be an opt-in scenario where they could put smaller snippets instead of having the 5 minutes I'm running the tool, say I want to insert video and audio now. So we're making some changes on this line to make the file smaller and a little more consumable. But yes, we definitely care about from the server side as well.
Which templates will support this?
So the question is, which process templates in TFS will support it? All of them. And in the feedback scenario, the only difference is the nomenclature of the work items. It's not, so if you're in the Scrum template, they're going to be product backlog items versus the Agile, it's going to be user stories. Other than that, it's the exact same functionality, exact same UI for all the templates that are shipping. And if somebody builds a custom template, they can add the same functionality as well.
Will Scrum be shipping with the next Visual Studio box?
Will the Scrum template be shipping? Yes, the Scrum template will be shipping in the box for the next release. Other questions around the feedback scenario? Yes. Security with feedback? That's a great question. So security feedback from security is very important. I can talk a little bit about how we do it inside of Microsoft. We haven't built any specific tooling inside of TFS for this yet, but there's definitely some great tools out on the web. As part of our release inside of Microsoft, we have what's called tenant checklists, where we have lists of all the different major tenets that are cross-platform, things like localization, world readiness, things like security, things like performance. Those types of things, from a management perspective, all the feature teams are responsible for being cognizant of that throughout development and then as well as completing a checklist at the end. For security, we have a very large list of things we have to check, things like running tools such as API scan to make sure our APIs are correct and we're not using any hidden Windows APIs, being able to run tools like FXCOP and code analysis tools, which do ship in the box, and making sure that we're code analysis clean. Making sure we do threat modeling is a very important way that you can, as from a security perspective, bring feedback back to the team. There isn't a single feature that we ship, even preemptive, who's external to Microsoft, even though they're shipping in the box, they're going through the exact same process I would for my own feature, where they do a complete threat model, they sit down with security advisors and do a complete analysis of that threat model to figure out where the different penetration points might be in my application. So that's, I definitely didn't identify that in the cycle, but I think that is incredibly important when you talked about these horizontals, and not just security performance as well, making sure that your application is going to meet the bar, making sure that you are able to support other cultures, other screen resolutions, high contrast, things like that. Those are great pieces of feedback to incorporate. But it's, we don't have as much tooling around that. It's something that you have to do more ad hoc. But great question. Other questions? Yes. So the question is about when do you really clean up? And I can, from one sense, I definitely can agree with you that some perspective it should be an automagic type of thing where if you close a work item, then we don't need the attachments. But some organizations don't feel that way. I, as the product owner, want Brian Harry's feedback from the last 6 months always available. So when I get feedback A and then I get conflicting feedback B, we can have a discussion with that information. I don't want, just because I close the work item and say, I've fixed this, I don't want to have all those results deleted. I definitely think it's up in the hands of the administrator to have that discussion of what's best for them, and we as Microsoft need to provide the right tooling to enable both scenarios.
Is it possible
to redirect the attachments to a different location instead of the server? So the question is it possible to redirect those attachments to a different location? I don't believe so, but I can. If we talk afterwards, I can get you a contact that can get you the correct answer on that. Right now, they go into the test results database, which is part of your TFS deployment.
I think that would have to be a
space. Understood, if you put it to a separate SAN or something like that. So I'm almost out of time, so I'm just going to finish up with the last slide I think I have. So we've talked a bit about different ways from the development side that we can incorporate feedback, making sure that the backlog has the right priorities. We mentioned that slightly, but it's important, and it's something that Aaron will talk about later. Talking about our lightweight requirements approach, using storyboarding as a way of getting feedback on design, having your sprint planning and tasks. This isn't something we spent any time about, but I think that Aaron's going to talk about it in his talk, being able to have a conversation with your team of how much time you have available to do the work, who's going to do the work, and making sure all your capacity is there, and then the context switching we also mentioned. From an operations perspective, we talked about how you can triage incidents, whether they come from preemptive or whether they come from operations manager, as well as how you can take action on the feedback that your stakeholders have early enough where you can actually make a difference in the product cycle. All these together are really important ways of making sure, and again, these are just some, there's many more like we discussed with securities, places that you can incorporate feedback early and often to make sure your software is always the best it possibly can be for your customers, and you as a developer don't feel like you're getting the feedback too late, you can't do anything about it. There are a bunch of other really good talks during the conference. Here's just a few that were specifically related to mine. Mickey's having a talk right after this talking about usability. That is something that's very important to me because that's how I get a customer touch point very early on in the product cycle for both my design documents as well as all of my actual working bits. She can probably talk a little bit about working with me and people on my team, that how we actually get that information from customers. Peter's going to talk about agile development. He can talk about how unit testing, as well as code review and a whole slew of other tools can be used by developers to help get feedback early throughout the product cycle. I already mentioned Aaron's talk on agile processes, how some of the backlog and task board and team scenarios can work there. And finally, Anu is going to have a talk on exploratory testing, which is something I didn't talk about, but how you can quickly and easily give yourself feedback as opposed to having your stakeholders give feedback at the end of the individual sprints. So I think we're out of time. I can stick around for a minute or two while I set up the next person. But thank you very much for your time, and enjoy the conference.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Justin. In 15 minutes, we'll be back in this room. We'll be talking about agile user experience here. Mickey Kono will be up for the next talk. We have a 15-minute break, and then we resume. Okay, Justin, we'll be here at the conference and I think around at the receptions. Okay? Thank you.